This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, also on Sirius XM Channel 80, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline. All right, Jameis Winston, I said it yesterday on this program. Big Monday night football game, right? Because, look, there ain't that much more preseason left. They're taking a game off the schedule. They've already played two, at least one. And, this was the second, this was game two. And Jameis and Taysom Hill were kind of neck and neck. Jameis had not wrapped it up. So there was some pressure here, like real pressure. Jameis was perfect. Even the one incompletion is being touted as a sign of maturity for Jameis. He only had, he was 9 for 10 with 123 yards, two deep touchdown passes. Taysom Hill was 11 of 20. Taysom Hill started slowly, but he was playing with the twos and the threes, but wound up 11 for 20 with 138 yards and a passing touchdown. No turnovers, no rushing attempts. But Jameis Winston was spectacular. And Marquez Callaway is the Saints' latest undrafted receiver who's showing out. You know, I mean, he really did make some nice catches. But Jameis Winston was throwing, he was just making good decisions. He was threading the needle. He was placing the ball where, you know, the receiver could make a play. He was doing a lot of good things there. Maybe that is the influence of Drew Brees and Sean Payton over the course of a year for him. It's one preseason game, I get it. But Monday Night Football, big profile, like high profile, big moment for him. He came through, passed with flying colors. And to me, how can the job not be his to lose, especially when, if it was like a tie, you would go with Jameis because Taysom Hill has value as a non-quarterback. Jameis does not. So if you have two equal, like, I don't know which way to go, well, Jameis has more upside. Jameis also has, it's like bigger boom or bust, but in the NFL, you kind of, if you're not going to be good, you don't want to be kind of not good. You'd like to be as bad as possible so you get that draft pick, ideally, right? If you could map it out, okay, these are the years we're not going to go to the playoffs. Yeah, you know what? It'd be nice if we could get a good draft pick that year. It's not like the NBA where you're in a draft lottery. Your record determines where you pick. And there is a drop-off, you know, as you go down in the first round. You pick way up high in the first round, you have a chance to get a Hall of Famer. Like a good chance. That's what you're expected to get, really. Lower down in the first round, you want a guy, you know, a good player. But there's a difference. So, like, Jameis has all that going for him, and his only value is his quarterback, whereas Taysom Hill can run, he can catch, he can do other things. And just his presence on the field can be confusing for the defense. He can run a wildcat, he can do all kinds of stuff with Taysom Hill. So that would be if it was neck and neck, but it is not neck and neck right now. Not after last night's performance by Jameis. Now, I will point out, for those who are, you know, I told you it was Jameis in this net. A former Heisman Trophy winner, national champion, BCS champion, number one overall draft pick, passing yards, NFL passing yards leader, right? That's Jameis Winston's resume. He needed a perfect performance on Monday Night Football in the preseason to, in my view, lock up the job against a gadget player. So let's not like go nuts about Jameis Winston just yet. If you look at the Saints still, the issue is this is not a quarterback-driven team. You look at the Saints, it's like the quarterback's not the thing that scares you on this team if you're the opposing defense. Now, that's not to say Jameis can't ever do that. You know, Ryan Tannehill was a bust. Let's face it, a first-round bust until he wasn't. Jameis Winston was a first-round bust, in fact. Number one overall pick bust until maybe he's not. But we got to see a lot more. At this moment, though, coach, when are you going to make your decision, right? Like, well, Jameis would really have to mess up now to lose it, right, coach?
So what's your timetable look like? By when do you want to decide?
I don't have one right now. Before we play the first game.
Yeah, before you play the first game. Well, that's going to come up pretty soon, according to, let me see, that's coming up pretty soon. Chris Canty on ESPN 98.7 New York was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning after that very impressive Jameis Winston performance on Monday Night Football last night. Chris, what do you think about Jameis and the Saints?
He saw something down the field. It looked like he wanted to take a shot at it, but then he thought better of it, and he decided he was going to check the ball down to Tony Jones. Now, even though it was an incompletion, that decision to not try to push the ball into a coverage where it could end up being a turnover-worthy play, like, to me, that shows the growth and maturation of the quarterback, and that has everything to do with being able to get with Sean Payton and watch Drew Brees up close and personal last year. So if Jameis can show that type of restraint, if he can avoid making those critical mistakes and then continue to challenge all three levels of the defense the way that he did last night, I just think that this that makes this New Orleans Saints offense a problem once we get to the regular season.
Oh, yeah. If Jameis Winston can be a near-perfect quarterback, yeah, New Orleans is going to be a problem. I would just point out to people, you know, Michael Thomas is going to miss a chunk of the season at least, right? If I were to tell you, but the Saints have a good, well-balanced roster. If I were to tell you the same thing about another good, well-balanced roster, the Green Bay Packers, right? Like, I give Gutekunst real credit for creating a good roster. He's a good GM in all respects except the most important one, which is keeping your all-world quarterback and your relationship good. But in other respects, he's a good GM. And if I were to tell you the Packers are going to remain as is, but I'm going to pluck off Aaron Rodgers for good and Davante Adams for half the season, what would you say about the Packers? Even if you were impressed by Jordan Love in a preseason game, you'd say, you know what? And some undrafted rookie wide out in a preseason game, say, you know what? They're good, but they're not going to compete for a Super Bowl. And that's where the Saints are. The Saints will not be Super Bowl contenders this year, barring some kind of miraculous run by Jameis Winston, where he looks throughout the season like he looked last night. Trevor Lawrence, meantime, has not looked good. If not for that deep amateur pedigree, you know, college pedigree, where he won a national title the year for the same team that Deshaun Watson had won the title the year before, but did it with far greater ease than Deshaun Watson. And then you see Deshaun Watson's record in the pros, and you go, well, anything he can do, Trevor Lawrence can kind of do at least as well. 6'6", big arm, accurate, you know, real athlete, can run. He could do, he checked, like, you know, remember the draft with Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold and them? And Baker went first, which was a surprise to many, because Sam Darnold checked more boxes. And usually they like the guy out of college who leaves the fewest kind of boxes unchecked. And then Baker wasn't tall. Baker wasn't that fast. But he's mobile enough. But Sam Darnold checked every box. But he did it. He checked every box at a certain level. And I thought Darnold has a chance to be a good quarterback for a number of years. Hasn't happened so far. But Trevor Lawrence checked all those same boxes that Sam Darnold checked, but at a much higher level. Right? He was the guy who checked every box, apparently at an elite level. No one was going to pass on Trevor Lawrence. But of everyone so far, of all these quarterbacks, who has underperformed his status the most? It's Trevor Lawrence. Mac Jones has, I'd say, overperformed for the 15th overall pick, fifth quarterback taken. I would say Justin Fields has certainly overperformed for the 11th pick, fourth quarterback taken. I would say Trey Lance has shown why there's interest in him. He hasn't been as good as maybe Zach Wilson or Justin Fields, but he's shown some real upside. And he was the least experienced quarterback, and people knew he was the biggest project, but also maybe the most upside. And he hasn't done anything to diminish that way of thinking. And Zach Wilson's been spectacular. The only guy who you go, ooh, I don't know, is Trevor Lawrence so far. To be fair to Trevor Lawrence, when Gardner Minshew is in, it's not much better. It's like the same thing. Is this an Urban Meyer problem? Urban Meyer, by the way, admitted that the Jags' first-string offense has got to get better. Coach, what about your team's performance?
Thought we protected him a little bit better. I think there's only one sack, if I remember right, for the night. Yeah, we got a, you know, DJ Chark. I'm counting on him to get back and give us a little vertical threat down the field. I didn't, you know, Philip Dorsett's got great speed. We gotta start getting the ball. And that was the plan, and we just didn't execute in the run game and then the throw game. We just wasn't much rhythm in the first half.
Let's go to the Goodyear hotline. Dan Orlovsky, ESPN NFL analyst, who wants me to put some respect on Matt Ryan's name. Dan, I just tell the truth what I see. I just give it to you straight. Matt Ryan has looked to me like at this point in his career, just a play action quarterback. If he has it, he's good. If he doesn't, he's not. That's not respecting Matt Ryan.
I mean, dude, he's 15 years in the league.
All right, so.
You didn't say that this morning, though. You didn't say at this point in his career. What you said was Matt Ryan, he's a play-action passing quarterback, and if he doesn't have it, I'm just like, what is this guy? That's what you said.
Yes, that's right, because I'm talking about this Matt Ryan. Do I need to are you not aware that he's been in the league for 15 years? Like, I am aware. He's been to a Super Bowl. He's performed at a very high level for a number of years. I'm talking about this.
But,
look, once upon a time, Eli Manning, my favorite player ever, right, because he won two Super Bowls, miraculous clutch, was hot garbage in the NFL, and I said it. I didn't mean always. I meant then.
But, Max, you talk about when quarterbacks use play action and are successful off of it, that it, like, belittles their ability to be really good.
That's
like saying, oh, LeBron James, what he does best is go to the rim. Well, yeah, but he does that better than everybody. So that's not going to make
him. But at this point in his career, Dan, without play action, at this point in his career, he's not good. Or he hasn't been good recently.
I completely disagree with that.
Okay, well, you know more about quarterbacking than me, I would say, is an understatement, which shows you how awesome I am that I'm able to frequently be right about it in arguments with you. How does that happen? Listen, Dan.
You're a wordsmith.
You had a tweet. Look at what Wilson has with LaFleur. And now we're hearing more and more people make this point. Like, I don't know, with Trevor Lawrence down there in Jacksonville versus Zach Wilson in New York. Can you expound upon that?
Well, again, it's two games, but I watched the Jets offense and I watched the things that they've done with Zach Wilson. And I'm going, okay, this is what Matt LaFleur has done with Aaron Rodgers. This is what Kyle Shanahan has done with RG3 and Kirk Cousins and Jimmy Garoppolo in the future, Trey Lance. Like, they're just utilizing these guys' skills to allow them to play well. And a really interesting thing that I just found out today is through two preseason games, the quarterback that is getting the ball out second fastest through everybody that qualifies is Zach Wilson, because they're building in really easy stuff that's good, and it helps not only the quarterback but everybody. And then I'm going, well, where's Trevor Lawrence? And I'm going watching this offense, and I'm going, okay, last night, this is 2 weeks now, that the only reason this offense has had any form of success is because Trevor Lawrence has done some really impressive stuff. And I'm watching him hold the ball and hold the ball and hold the ball and hold the ball. And I'm going, why, when you have a bottom 10 offensive line that is sitting three starters, are you asking the quarterback to hold the ball so long? And I just want them to unhandcuff Trevor Lawrence and allow him to go. And right now it's just so basic. And to anybody, Max, that is sitting here telling me, well, Dan, it's the preseason and you're vanilla, you don't want to show what you're going to do, then why is the head coach so emotional on the sideline? If you're the head coach and you know you are being as vanilla as you can because you are saving this explosive stuff that is going to be awesome in week one, why do you look like you're so emotionally drained by the results of the plays? Why? That's why I don't think they are being vanilla. That's why I don't think they are holding stuff.
Dan Orlovsky, ESPN NFL analyst on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. I am Max Kellerman. Dan, can Jameis take the Saints to a new level with his arm? I mean, Drew Brees wasn't exactly pushing the ball down the field toward the end, especially showing up in the playoffs. It seemed to limit them. Jameis Winston, to me, is not going to be any great shakes at quarterback. However, I have to keep an open mind. He's a Heisman Trophy winner. He's a BCS champion. He's a number one overall draft pick. He's led the league in passing yards one season. There is a resume there that suggests upside, and I have to say, I was very impressed last night. I thought with the starting job on the line, if I'm the coach, he's got the job now. Can that actually be a strength quarterback for this team?
Yeah, with discipline comes freedom. That's the way I'm describing Jameis right now. I think he could do things that Drew was incapable of doing the last year or two. That doesn't mean it's going to take this offense to a better level. Drew was still really good last year, and that offense has been really good for years, even the last couple years with Drew. Will they be able to do things that Drew was incapable of in creating explosive plays? Yes. But, when taking your chances and your shots to create explosive plays, the ball goes in harm's way more. So for a quarterback, I believe Drew threw six interceptions last year. I'm not banking on Jameis throwing that many interceptions while also creating 10 more explosive plays or 12 more explosive plays. If he creates more explosive plays, he's also going to put the ball in harm's way more, which will create more turnovers. It's a fine balance and a fine line for them to walk. But right now, Jameis is playing free because he's playing with discipline.
So
he's playing in the way where, okay, coach, you called the play and it's not there. Great. I'm going to throw it to somebody else. I'm going to throw it away. I'm going to check it down. And when the moments present themselves where I can be aggressive, I have this freedom to do it because I played discipline for all those other plays.
Dan, talking to Dan Orlovsky, ESPN NFL analyst on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Because of Jameis's great performance last night, what's being lost a little bit, and then the news about, you know, Cam going into COVID protocol, which is the protocol, by the way, if you have not been vaccinated, Cam has not answered that question, that whether or not he's been vaccinated. He said it's a personal matter. He said this in a public pandemic with a highly infectious disease, that it's a personal choice. Okay, Cam. But the protocols here in is in now are for people who haven't been vaccinated. So that story and the Jameis Winston game from yesterday have overshadowed the fact that, Dan, Cam was excellent. And it's not like Mac Jones has played poorly. Mac Jones has been very good. Cam was just simply better. He was excellent. And that's kind of getting buried here. Do you think that he is jeopardizing a starting job right now by being, if you connect the dots, unvaccinated? Remember, when he got COVID last year, his season was never the same after that. He missed a game, he didn't play as well, etc. Do you think he's jeopardizing something here?
I'll say this. The situation that they're in right now opens the door for Mac Jones to win the starting job. Mm-hmm. But this is also the door that Cam Newton's play never opened. Because you're right. Mac has been outstanding. Cam just never opened the door for him to take the starting job. His play was just so sound and solid. And I was actually talking to Cam's private quarterback coach, George Whitfield, over the weekend, just talking about the things that they worked on because his mechanics have gotten so much cleaner. And it's been impressive, and it's a credit to Cam. But now the Patriots have 4 or 5 days with Mac Jones, getting him to every single first-team rep. Watch him. And I promise you, I know a little bit about Mac Jones calling college football. He's walking into that building going, this is my team. This is my offense. And just play the hypothetical game. What happens if this offense looks better over the next 4 days in practice and then goes in the joint practice against the Giants and looks better and is more efficient and more explosive, and the quarterback position is more efficient and more explosive and creates more, does more, and there's ownership. And then they go into the game, and I'm assuming Mac will start the game because Cam's going to have 1-2 days of practice. Well, what happens if it transfers over to the game? So I think the situation opens the door for Mac Jones to become the starter, because the door was never opened by Cam.
Dan, before I let you go, Justin Fields, to me, has been spectacular. Second game, not as good as the first, but even the way he handles himself, the way he talks about Andy Dalton, and he's just a leader. He's got an arm. He's got legs. He's got a head on his shoulders. Like, he's the guy I wanted to – listen, you were yelling at me. You and Stephen A. were yelling at me, oh, you can't draft Justin Fields. You already have Daniel Jones. And I'm like, Daniel Jones may one day be good. Justin Fields may be great. Right? Like, I just want him. Nevertheless, they're talking about Andy Dalton starting. And you know what, Dan? I get it. And let me tell you my reasoning. I want you to react, and I got to get out of here. I don't want Justin Fields playing behind an offensive line where he's a tackling dummy. Like, I hate to say it, the Red Rifle used to be a pretty good quarterback, but he would be my sacrificial lamb. I would make him the tackling dummy because I don't want that offensive line protecting, in quotes, Justin Fields, who I think is the future of the franchise. Your position.
I understand where you're coming from, but you're not going to get fired by thinking that. Matt Nagy is. That's the reality. Like, context of the situation matters. I've been stressing that to people for the last 2 days. I get it. The offensive line stinks. And I'm the last person that wants to throw a guy out there with a bad offensive line. But Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, this is their second opportunity to groom a young quarterback and develop a young quarterback and show that they can win with one. They don't have time on their side. They just don't. And I think that's why I said this, Max. Matt Nagy has to play Justin Fields for the reasons I just said. The Chicago Bears organization cannot because of their offensive line. I'll leave you with this. They're going to start Andy Dalton week one. What's the inflection point? What's the inflection point to saying, okay, now it's time for Justin Fields?
Got to look at the schedule.
I hope it's not. I hope it's not tied to the performance of the quarterback or the win-loss record. I hope it's tied to the offensive line. Because I go back to last year. They were 2-0. Mitch Trubisky had 5 touchdown passes and 3 interceptions through 2.5 games, and they benched him.
Yeah, well, I hope it's not week two. I don't want any, I don't want him against the Rams. Well, I guess that's week one. The great Dan Orlovsky, ladies and gentlemen. Appreciate it, Dan. Talk to you soon.
Later, bud.
The Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. A Jameis Winston bounce back game? Is that enough to top the Bucks? Put the Saints over the Bucks? Raj, I can't say this with a straight face. Here's my real question for next segment. I'm going to do an NFC South preview. If you combined all the players from the other NFC South teams onto one team, could they beat the Bucks as much as the Bucks beat them? Did you know the arrow in Amazon's logo represents A to Z? Maybe the My Computer Career logo should represent unemployed to employed. Ryan was out of work when he started classes in March and September. April, May, June, July, August, September. That's not a long time. 5 months, 6 months. In September, he started his IT career working for Amazon, making more money than he ever thought possible. Here's a prime opportunity. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You could start your new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. NFC South preview next.
The beginning of the season. God, man, I want to be in that moment. It's just one of them things we say, man, I wish I had that right now.
Are you ready? Because I'm ready.
This is Mike Greenberg, and I'm ready.
This is Mina Kimes, and you know my Seahawks are ready.
This is Matthew Berry. The Texas A&M Aggies are ready.
This is Ryan McGee, and I'm ready.
Football is back, and it kicks off every morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, and continues all day right here on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, also on SiriusXM Channel 80, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776.
Can any of the trash in the NFC South challenge the Bucks? Probably not, but we'll talk about it anyway. Here's
the NFC
Max.
South preview, indeed. We're going to ask, can the Saints challenge Brady and the Bucks for the NFC South crown if, you know, Jameis plays the way he did? And yeah, if Jameis is perfect like he was yesterday, like where the one incompletion also showed good things about decision-making and stuff, yeah, then they can. But you're asking Jameis to be the best version of himself and one of the best quarterbacks in football. Yeah, if Jameis is that, then yeah, they can challenge him. I'm not anticipating Jameis Winston will be one of the best quarterbacks in football. Really, the question is, if you made one super team, you took all the rosters of the other three teams, not with depth, I get it, but made one super team of 22 starters, would they be as good as the Bucs? I don't know. I don't know if there's a... I don't know. Look at the Bucs. The offensive line is great. They have the best linebacker tandem in the league. They have the best three-headed beast at receiver, maybe of all time. They have the GOAT still operating at a very high level. They have a head coach who has the pulse of the team. What else is there? Am I missing things? They can get pressure without blitzing. They're pretty good. Now, here's the issue with the rest of the NFC South. I'll take it one team at a time. Let's start with the Saints. Those quarterbacks aren't scaring anybody. Saints have a really good offensive line, and they can play defense. You know, and that's good. You have an offensive line, you can play defense. It means you're going to be able to run the ball. It means you make your quarterback better than he ought to be. All that. Michael Thomas's timeline on return, he delayed surgery till toward the end of the preseason, or the offseason, on his foot. Michael Thomas not going to be back anywhere between like the end of September, figure around week three, and the end of October. He's going to miss a chunk of the season. And people are forgetting, 12 months ago, 14 months ago, Michael Thomas was not only in the discussion for best receiver in football, he may have had the best case. That's a big thing to lose along with Drew Brees. They have a great coach. They have an offensive line. They can play defense. You can't dismiss them as a bad team. But will they be much better than 9-8? I think 9-8 is somewhat optimistic for this team. That's the Saints. How about the Panthers? Look, Sam Bradford has never really had a good situation, right? And his career is not that old right now. But, sorry, Bradford. Darnold. I always do that. I thought Bradford was going to be great, by the way. I was wrong about that. But Darnold, I thought, would be good for a number of years. He's not been good for even a single year. Sam Darnold is not a starting caliber quarterback based on what he's done so far in his career. And if what Carolina brings to the table with Christian McCaffrey and everything else, you can say, Well, this makes Sam Darnold okay. That's what you're getting, okay. I think at this point, the sample size is large enough. Like, if Sam Darnold winds up a good NFL quarterback, he has surprised me at this point. And it comes down to quarterbacking in this league, as they say. When you think about Tom Brady's career, what did he really have to do in a quarterback-less AFC East? All he had to do, because they were going to win a bunch of games, because you played those teams, you know, six times, the other three teams in the division, all he had to do was win out in a division, you know, win a division of quarterback-less teams. Like, they had the best they ever had there was, like, Chad Pennington before he got hurt, who did not have a good arm, but was very good in other respects. Like, that was the best. Brett Favre for a year or two toward the end. Like, there was no one in the AFC East. So all he had to do was win a home playoff game, Tom Brady, and he's in the NFC Championship game every year. What's bizarre now, the reason I bring that up, is if you look at the NFC South, he's again in a quarterback-less division. The Falcons are not, like, where are the Falcons good? Well, they got Kyle Pitts, right, but they lost Julio Jones. That ain't good. And Matt Ryan, you want to say he's a solid quarterback when you count in the play action and everything? He's a mid-pack quarterback in the NFL, maybe high average. Okay. What else on the Falcons do you like? Not like they're strong anywhere else. But Matt Ryan's days as an elite quarterback are over, if he ever was one. Sam Darnold is maybe not even a starting quarterback. And we don't know if Jameis is either, or Taysom Hill is either. Jameis looked really good in Monday Night Football. It's preseason. One game of preseason. So once again, Tom Brady finds himself in a division where quarterback is not only not a strength, it's a weakness. Except for the Falcons, you can point to the other teams and say, actually, quarterback is a weakness for that team. And once again, Tom Brady finds himself not only on the most talented team, maybe in the NFL, that just won a Super Bowl and returned all 22 starters, but he finds himself in a division running unopposed. Got to give it to him. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Coming up, last take is your take. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Straight Talk Wireless has rolled out 5G coverage nationwide. And you can get a Samsung Galaxy A32 5G for only $299. No contract. All on America's best network. Straight Talk Wireless 5G capable device required. Actual availability, coverage, and speed may vary.
Are you ready for some football? This is Keyshawn Johnson. I'm ready.
Whoa, get ready, Bam-a-lam, get ready to ride.
The countdown to kickoff continues. 16 days.
Put your hands up. Now stay.
Here's Paul, DeAndre Hopkins.
The biggest season ever.
Let's go!
And it starts every morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. And continues all day right here on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, also Sirius XM Channel 80. We got a line or two open for last take. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. 30 for 30 podcasts. And The Undefeated presents The King of Crenshaw. Ooh, ooh, ooh. This four-part series examines how Nipsey Hussle's life, death, and legacy impacted the sports world, particularly the NBA. Here, DeMar DeRozan, Isaiah Thomas, and DeMarcus Cousins, among others, explore the realities of life as a black man in America, Nipsey's dedication to South LA and his community, and how Nipsey inspired millions. The marathon continues. The King of Crenshaw. Binge all four episodes now on SiriusXM, Pandora, Switcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Before we go to imaging, Raj, I need to say something. Even if this means I won't get to as many calls.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because yeah. I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's last take.
Now I'll get to say what I wanted to say. Even if this means I won't get to as many calls, it's a story about Nipsey Hussle I need to tell. When I first got to L.A., this is New Year's 2010, or Christmas 2009 or 10, something like that. I get to L.A., and I'm going to do a radio show, which I wound up doing with Marcellus Wiley. And when I got there, I realized, look, I'm from the city. I'm from New York. I never lived anywhere else. I had an apartment in D.C. for 15 months in 2002 when I was hosting Around the Horn. I was the original host, one of the architects of that show. And so now, for the first time, I'm living in L.A. And I realize if you're from New York and you go and you're in L.A., but you got to root for the Lakers, first of all. It's a must. I wasn't going to give up the Yankees or the Giants, but I give up my sorry Knicks for the Lakers. I always wanted to be a Lakers fan. But also I thought, let me find an artist out here that people really aren't up on yet. So I listened to a whole bunch of artists out of L.A. I dug through the crates, so to speak, and I found Nipsey Hussle. And I was like, ooh, this dude. And he really hadn't blown up yet, but he was starting to. And I played I'm Feeling Myself and Keys to the City because I realized those were like pop. Those are kind of had like pop music appeal. And I started playing them on the show, and I said, I'm going to play these in and out of every break until Nipsey Hussle calls the show. And a lot of people in L.A. are like, Nipsey who? And I played them in and out of every break. And on day like 2 or 3 of doing that, Nipsey Hussle calls the show. And the reason I did this is because once upon a time there was a DJ who did that with Frank Sinatra. He played Sinatra, and out of everybody, I'm going to keep playing nothing but Sinatra till Sinatra calls. So Sinatra let him play it for like a couple months or weeks or whatever it was, and then called, right? He got all that airtime. Nipsey called the show after like 2-3 days. I said, Nipsey. It might have even been the same day I started to do it. I said, Nipsey, what are you doing? Yeah, I was going to keep playing it. You could have had on this station nothing but you heard in and out of every break for like a month before you called. And Nipsey was like, yeah, my people were telling me that, but maybe I should have done that. But I called. And he was a real good dude and a dude who had you know, gone through tough things and you know, was using his life and what he had learned to try to make the world a better place at that point in his life and made great music. That was that, you know, sometimes you hear these things and it affects you. And I remember the day he was killed, that was like feeling that moment, you know, and thinking, damn, he was a good one. Anyway, I'm very much looking forward to that 30 for 30 documentary on Nipsey Hussle. The Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus. Brad in Compton, what's your last take?
Hey, Max, is Aaron Rodgers going into his 17th season this year in the NFC? Do you think this is finally the year he breaks the tie with Tom Brady and gets his second NFC championship and gets the Packers back to the Super Bowl?
You know, the most devastating thing for Aaron Rodgers last year, and that couldn't help the situation with the Packers, is, yeah, Tom Brady, as I just spent a lot of time talking about last segment, all those years in the AFC East, no other good quarterbacks. Like, really, the worst 20-year stretch for quarterbacks in a division easily in the history of the NFL. And so all he has to do is, of course, you're going to win the division. You're going to wind up playing one home game, and if you win that one home game, you're in the AFC Championship. So, of course, he, you know, had all that success, and he had Belichick and Aaron Rodgers. Then year one, Brady comes to the NFC. Year one, he beats Rodgers in the NFC Championship game. That's got to be devastating for Rodgers. And how did it happen? With the game on the line, his coach, Aaron Rodgers' coach, takes the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands on fourth down and gives it to Tom Brady, only needing like one or two first downs to end the game. That's got to eat away at Aaron Rodgers. And Brady's on the better team. They've returned all 22 starters. I still believe Aaron Rodgers is better, but it's a lot of pressure on him to prove it this year. You're not wrong. Buddha in the Bronx. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, two boxing questions. First, you think Sean Porter's style and his chin and his undeniable heart is going to take Terrence Crawford to the deep waters? And does Caleb Plant have any chance of surviving more than 8 rounds against Canelo?
Caleb Plant does have a chance of surviving more than 8 rounds, but I do like Canelo by stoppage in that fight. I think Caleb Plant has the fast twitchies and good boxing skills, but Canelo has more precise boxing skills than Caleb Plant. And he's a natural counterpuncher, and he's learned how to be an aggressive fighter and cut off the ring. He's a great body puncher. I think Canelo catches Plant too cleanly, too often, wears him down, knocks him out. And as far as Sean Porter and Terrence Crawford are concerned, Sean Porter is live against anyone. Against anyone. He took Errol Spence, a rangy, tall, southpaw, with real hand speed, real punching power, a real chin, heart, determination, a real good southpaw jab, high volume of punches, even with the fast twitchies and the high volume, and the punching power, and aggressive, right? Like, Errol Spence is a nightmare to fight. That fight was one of the great welterweight fights of the modern era. The difference in the fight to me was Spence knocked him down and Porter got right back up. Sean Porter, a great fighter. He boxes when you want to brawl. He roughs you up when you want to box. He has a high boxing IQ and all the heart in the world and good ability. Of course, that's a very tough fight for Terrence Crawford. Sean Porter is a very tough fight for anyone at 147 pounds. He's also a very good broadcaster, Sean Porter. All right, that was the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus and Sirius XM Channel 80. I'll see you tomorrow. In the meantime, Shanae and Golic Jr. in a matter of moments. And let me just say, poof.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.